Hi, welcome to Female Trouble. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a podcast spotlighting women in Baltimore. Joy Pastel's sensitivity is her superpower. The singer, rapper, and songwriter is an up-and-comer in the Baltimore music scene, who most recently released a single called Consciousness and an accompanying video in which she plays the roles of icons like Angela Davis, Billie Holiday, Nina Simone, and Celie Johnson from The Color Purple. Joy talked about her upcoming debut EP, Diaspora, and balancing perfectionism with knowing when to let go of a creative project. She also discussed her musical theater background, regaining confidence after facing a middle school setback, being raised by a musician mother, and coming back to Baltimore. Here's our conversation. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
I'm 24 years old. I am a Cancer on the Gemini cusp. I am a musician locally located here in Baltimore, Maryland.
Are you into astrology?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I'm super. My moon is in Aries and I'm a rising Virgo. And I'm always checking my horoscope once a week. And I'm always asking people their full charts because I'm like, who am I dealing with?
So what are the personality traits that ring true for your chart and for like how you actually are?
I'm super sensitive. Like, well, most artists are sensitive in general because like whether people like to admit it or not, that's how we can feel so strongly and like turn those feelings into whatever medium it is that the artist chooses, you know? Because of my Aries moon, I can get very like fiery. Like, it's like almost like boiling water, you know, which is very much a trait that I've learned to value so much going into my older age, because when it comes to standing up for people or standing up for myself, I have the ability to vocalize that and be like, all right, no, like that's enough. You're not going to treat me this way. You're not going to treat those people that way either. And, you know, very true to that chart, the Virgo perfectionist, like I obsess over details, you know?
So have you always stood up for people in that way?
Yes. Yeah. Throughout my whole life, I've always been outspoken. You know, of course, I've had many moments where, you know, I didn't speak up. And I learned that when I don't speak up, I feel bad. Like I genuinely feel like I internalize it. And so I've learned like more for my mental health, I have to say whatever it is that's on my mind. So I've learned like, hey, if this is the type of personality that you have, learn how to say it. Because it's never so much, it's not always what you're saying, it's how you're saying it.
So where did you grow up?
I grew up the first quarter of my life, I was in Jersey City. So we moved to Baltimore when I was 8 years old, and I stayed here until I was 18. I did most of my schooling here. This is what I consider home.
What's Jersey City like?
Jersey City, you know, since I was a child, like, my memory is not the strongest of, like, all the details, but the vibe is very, it's very raw. You know, the accents, from the accents to the food to, it's similar to Baltimore in the sense of the grit, you know, but it's a different vibe. And I wish to explain Jersey. It's gritty. I love the fact that like my roots are in Jersey. I really appreciate that. I feel like living there definitely molded me, helped too.
In what ways did it help mold you?
Just being exposed to all the different types of people, because like we were always in New York all the time. And so like, luckily I was always around literally all types of people. And I feel like in Baltimore, it's not as diverse as in Jersey or in New York at all. It's nowhere close to being as diverse.
Did you notice that right away when you came to Baltimore?
Yes. That is one thing I definitely noticed, was the lack, not only the lack of diversity, but the segregation that exists here.
And you could see that even at like age 8.
Yeah, you could see it. I mean, at the cafeteria tables, the white kids would sit with the white people, and the black people sit with the black people. I always peep that. And, you know, that was like probably like the one adjustment for me coming from Jersey. I was like, oh, okay.
And that's kind of like a unique perspective to have at such a young age, because at that point, most people have only known that one default, whether it is like
right.
The diverse background or all white, or like the white kids at one table, the black kids at one table. So you like already had that perspective at a young age.
Yes.
What brought your family to Baltimore?
Money. My mother is a single mother, and you know, we've always moved around a lot. Even in Jersey, we lived in different spots all the time. Just because, you know, they would put the rent up. Because, you know, now Jersey City is like, I couldn't, like, $1 million. No one was trying to come to Jersey when we were living there, you know. But now it's super gentrified and, like, popping. And so that's really what it was. I think my mother had, she thought there were more better opportunities for her in Baltimore. And it was, I don't want to, I might be putting words in my mother's mouth when she said that it was more affordable, but it would make sense because, you know, the more south you go, I feel like the more affordable things get.
Do you feel like at that time you guys were pushed out because of gentrification, or was that just kind of like an independent decision money-wise?
I don't think that we were pushed out because of gentrification, because it was still gritty. Like, it was still like the crime rate was whack when we were living there. So I feel like that was also another reason why my mother wanted to leave.
What was that adjustment like for you?
The adjustment. I feel like I've never had trouble making friends. You know, like, I'm an only child. So my mother taught me at a young age, like, you need to go up to people and, like, speak to them and ask to play with them. Because my mother would be like, all right, I'm tired of, like, playing with you on this playground. Like, you need to go make friends your age that have the same stamina as you. So, like, as far as making friends, it was never a problem. It was probably just more of, like, the, like, tensions that I peeped when I was young. Things like that. And then also just along with being that age and 8 years old, like, just growing up already being awkward.
You felt awkward?
Oh, yeah.
What about you is awkward?
I don't know. I feel like because I'm so sensitive, I just feel like things are intensified for me. So, like, something that might seem small or minor to someone else is like, oh my God, it's such a big deal for me, you know? And so I've learned getting older to, like, kind of, like, remove myself, like, take a step back and be like, is it really that serious, or are you just feeling too much?
How do you feel like you got to that point?
I feel like the shift actually happened, like, pretty recently, like, within the past few years, because I started to notice that, and I think that being, like, empathetic and being sensitive is, like, in itself a superpower, you know what I mean? Like, I think it's such a beautiful thing, and, like, for me, it's more about learning to accept how I am, you know what I mean? Because, like, society and, like, everyone else was always telling me, like, you're feeling too much, you know, da-da-da-da-da, and it's like, yeah, maybe for you, you know what I mean? But, like, this is the way that I am. So, like, how can I use this in my favor? So growing up allowed me to, you know, kind of, I learned how to communicate my emotions in a way that isn't overly emotional, if that makes sense. You know, so instead of, like, showing all these things while I'm saying it, being able to be like, hey, I feel like this. When you do this, I feel like this, you know, instead of showing everything and overwhelming people.
Did you like being an only child?
Yeah, sure. I mean, I always wanted siblings, but, like, we went through periods, like, where, like, we had to live with my mom's friend, and, like, she had two daughters, so, like, for a little bit, I was living with them, and it's like, I had sisters for a bit, and I always had friends, and I talked to myself a lot, too, so I feel like I really did enjoy being an only child.
Do you have a first musical memory?
My first musical memory. I mean, my mother's a musician, so, like, probably, you know, my mother doing gigs, practicing for gigs.
What kind of musician was she?
Is she?
Yeah.
She sings, I would say she sings from her soul. You know, so she loves jazz and she loves, like, blues. Those are, like, two of her favorite. You know, she sings from her heart.
Was that your first favorite music, and did you always like what she liked?
Yes. No, not necessarily. I had to grow up to appreciate some of the music that she would play for me. Like Tina Marie, I really did not like Tina Marie growing up. And, like, now I love her. Like, that's one of my favorite vocalists. So, like, certain things I had to grow up to understand a bit more. But, yeah, usually, like, whoever my mother, like, was playing, my mother's huge Michael Jackson fan, you know, Stevie Nicks, Chaka Khan. There was, like, a lot of Led Zeppelin. My mother listens to a little bit of everything. So I'm so grateful for her for exposing me to all these different genres as well.
And it sounds like female vocalists were always strong growing up.
Yes. Yeah, my mother is very, very much, very much into the strong female vocalists.
When did you start writing and singing yourself?
Middle school. I always wrote, like, whether it was like journaling or like little poems. And that maybe not, I didn't even necessarily think they were poems, you know, but just my feelings in like stanzas instead of like a long free flowing verse. But in middle school, I was in Lock Raven Academy and I was in the musical theater program. So I remember I started to write my own songs just to like, I wouldn't even write them to, because when I was in middle school, it wasn't like I was on the computer, like on YouTube looking for beats, like the way that you can do it nowadays. Like I was literally just writing songs to nothing, of like all my songs were about love. Just like little corny love songs that like middle schoolers write about. And yeah, that was definitely when I first started.
Were you into musicals? What were some of the musicals you liked if you were in musical theater at school?
My favorite musical was Rent. I used to watch Rent all the time. My mother's like, how many times do you go watch this movie? And I'm like, I just love it. Like, but I feel like I loved Rent because of the message. I was just like, yes. Like, I was just learning and I was just like, yes. Like, you know, just Rent is a real powerful story. Like, everything behind it, like, I really appreciate that. But the musicals that I was in were like, I was in Wind in the Willows. I was also in You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown. So those two.
What character were you?
I was Snoopy and You're a Good Man, Charlie Brown.
That's amazing.
And I was the Chief Weasel in Wind in the Willows.
I don't know that show, but Chief Weasel sounds very dignified.
It was. And we got to fence. So that was fun. I remember that was really fun to learn.
So was this something that was just for fun to you, or did you like want to go on to act and have music be part of your life?
Yeah. I wanted to be an actress. That was my thing. Like, I was like, all right, like, because Lock Raven is like the magnet program. So like, if you're in the performing arts magnet, you get four. So like, you get all four. So it's dance, percussion, acting, singing. Then the next year you choose two, you know, and then the next year I chose musical theater and vocals. And the final year you choose one. And I chose musical theater just because I feel comfortable on the stage. Like, the stage is like, I've always felt comfortable on the stage from when I was very, very young. So I really wanted to be an actress, but I applied to the BSA and I was living in the county. So I know that they do put priority. I think they put priority city kids over county kids. But I had gotten a call back and I remember this specifically. I'll never forget this. I was like, they were asking us to do improv. And that was my weak part. Because, like, you know, just something about improv, I was tending to overthink at that point in my life, and, you know, just like most humans do. So improvisation was hard for me because I feel like it's like blue, and I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. Like,
I think it's blue. Really hard for most people, and most people are really bad at
yes,
it.
Yes, no, like yeah. It's like, you know, and I'm like, I'm 13, like, blue, like, I don't know, like, what do you mean blue, like, sad, I didn't get into BSA after that callback, but I'll never remember, I looked to, like, I was talking to a girl, and I was like, oh, yeah, like, oh, she's like, what have you done, and I'm like, oh, I was just in my school play, like, I was Chief Weasel, and she's like, oh, I was just on Lion King in Broadway, I was like, oh, okay, like, and I remember, like, I feel like that had me a little shook as well.
How big of a deal did it feel like not getting into school?
It was huge. It was very disappointing. Like, so crushing. And, like, I feel like I played it off well. Like, I didn't. But I was very upset. You know, like, this is what I wanted. And I'm a kid and someone saying no. You know, like, you're not good enough. That's how I felt. And I remember it being, like, really, like, hurtful. And, like, it took me a while. Like, when I got older and looking back, I was like, wow, like, that really, like, hurt you. Because when I went to high school, I went to Towson my first year, and then I went to Lock Raven for the remaining years. And I was like, I just want to be normal. Like, that was my, I was like, I'm not going to do music. Like, I'm just going to fit in with everybody else. I'm not going to do acting anymore. Like, no. And I would sing for some of my friends, like, and then if my friends would find out, my one friend Amanda found out I sang, and she would make me sing on her voicemail. But I was really like, that's when I realized, like, oh, it really discouraged you.
How did you get that confidence back, and how did you get to where you are now musically?
Well, I feel like graduating like school was definitely like a hard environment for me. I was always like being reprimanded, always in detention, always never having recess, always out in the hallway because I was always talking too much, talking too loud, talking back. You know, that structure was not, the school structure does not fit, like it didn't fit me. But my mother, we didn't have enough money to afford another school that could, you know, that like alternative learning methods. We didn't have the money for that. So after graduating school, high school, I moved to Los Angeles and my mother moved there too. And I started to just record covers on my mom's USB mic. And I feel like just being in a new space made me feel like, because I remember my intention was like, I just want a fresh start. You know, like I didn't move out there to be like, I'm gonna, you know, like I just was like, I just want to go somewhere else that's like sunny and like the weather is nice and people are smiling. Like I just want a fresh start. And so I feel like being in a new environment, I felt like I had like a fresh slate. And that allowed me to, you know, start to pursue what I've always wanted to do.
Did your mom come out to be with you, or was she coming for her own reasons?
Yeah, well, my mother is a vocal coach. So my mother wanted to go out there and like expand. So I had decided that I wanted to move out there first. And then my mother was like, okay, well, I'll go. Like, I think my mom wanted a fresh start as well, too. And she was like, all right, yeah, like I want to go. So actually, my mom ended up going before me. And then I met her there.
Does she coach you?
No. And I need to start like I've internalized my mother's lessons because my mom's like been a vocal coach for like a long time. Ever since I've been in middle school, I always hear people doing vocal warm-ups in my house. Like always hear like diaphragmatic breathing. You should push from your diet. Like all these things that my mother teaches people, like I've definitely, it's stuck with me. So yes and no. You know, like I didn't have the discipline to go to my mother as much like every week, you know. But I definitely took away what I needed to take away.
Yeah, that's kind of a weird dynamic, too. I don't think anyone feels like going to their parent for some kind of formal lesson.
It's so weird. And already, like, me and my mother, like, would, you know, like, I'm an angsty teenager. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to sit here and, like, have my mother tell me, you need to sing like this. Like, I'm like, I don't want to hear this. Like, so, it's all, yeah, it was weird, yeah.
Did she encourage your musical pursuits?
Yeah, my mother's always been my number one support. Always. Always, like, very blessed to have her in my life. She's been nothing but supportive.
So what was your experience in L.A. like?
It was really, it was great. It was, like, overall growth. You know, like, I moved out there when I was 18, and I moved back to Baltimore 2015. So what was I? I was 23. So I stayed out there for 5 years. And, you know, I went out there to really go to college. I was just going to community college out there, but I had to wait a year to get in-state tuition in order for financial aid to cover everything. So I ended up working for a small company. It was a personal assistant. And I worked in Venice Beach. And I feel like Venice being my introduction to Los Angeles was really important because Venice Beach is like, everyone is just, I remember just being like, wow, everyone's mad free here. Like, look at all these different people, like, existing together, you know, and, like, being weird, you know, like, super, people just do mad, weird stuff. And it's normal, you know what, like, you know, like, people, like, will, you know, tourists will be like, oh, you know, but if you're, like, if you're really from Venice, like, people don't, they'll be like, oh, okay, like, yeah, that's what they're doing. It's not hurting me. So I feel like that was really important for me to see, because I feel like that probably subconsciously encouraged me to be more free.
Do you seek out that weird vibe? Obviously, Baltimore is an extremely weird place also.
Mm-hmm. Yes, very strange. Yeah, no, I like weird. I love it. I think it's necessary. People who don't fit into societal norms, people who push boundaries, and people who are unapologetic about it. You know, I love that. I admire anyone and everyone who is able to just be themselves at all times, you know, because there's always somebody encouraging you to not be like yourself, to be like a standard, you know, or whatever they think that you should be like. You know, people look at you and try to size you up and try to say, oh, like, that's cute what you're doing, but you should do this. That's a better look. you know, and they always want to mold you and, you know, oh, that's nice, but what about this? Instead of just accepting, hey, this is you in all forms, all sides of you.
And everyone thinks they're an expert in your field or your passion when they're not.
It's like, okay, like, if you really think that way, you should go do it.
Like, yeah, or it's like, oh, you think the thought hadn't occurred to me? Right. Like, you think I'm not aware of that?
Right.
So what brought you back to Baltimore?
My living situation got funny in LA. And so I just decided to come back. And it was funny because I was like, I'm going to come back. I told all my friends, I was like, I'll be back in 3 months. And it's been like 2 years now. It'll be 2 years in May. So I'm so happy I came back. I don't think that I would be doing what I'm doing right now had I not come back. So it's really great.
Did the timing feel right to you, or were you like reluctant to leave LA except for the living situation thing?
Yeah. Well, like, I'm like, not to bring back the zodiac, but I'm a Cancer. So part of me is like, change. Like, I'm like, no, like really resistant, really knowing like it's time for this change to come. But part of me is like, and I feel like also that's just a human thing. Part of us is like, we're comfortable like this. And it's like universe is pushing you and being like, no, like this needs to happen now. And you're like, oh my God, no. So I was upset a little bit, but at the same time, because I came back in May of 2015, that was like, I was watching everything about the Freddie Gray on CNN when I touched down May 5th.
So that was like right in the heat of it.
No, like right after the tanks left. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know, like freaking out because I was like, should I come back soon? You know, just because like my perspective is I'm looking at the media, and I called my mother up, you know, and she's like, nah, like it's not even like that, you know. But here I am across the country, and I'm looking on the news, and I'm seeing all this, and I'm like freaking out. So like, I feel like that jolted me to be like, all right, I need to I stopped being worried about, you know, what was going to happen. I was like, all right, I need to get back home.
It seems like a lot of people had a similar experience who were out of Baltimore. It's like, just from anecdotally from people I've talked to, like a lot of outsiders saw it as like very scary and like, don't you want to get out of Baltimore? But a lot of people who had left Baltimore felt this drive to come back to their home and mm-hmm. see what was going on for themselves and help fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally felt that. It was very strong.
How have you found the Baltimore music scene to be, and how did it differ from the kind of stuff you were involved with in LA?
The Baltimore music scene is, all right, Baltimore music scene is a shit because it's very DIY. The hustle here is so real. Like, it's so real. And I respect everyone out here doing it, because like, that was the difference, was what the scene that I was in LA was underground, but I wasn't getting paid. You know what I mean? Like, so you have like, so it was important because it started me. And also like, you know, on my way to school, I ride by Interscope every day. So you see like these, you see like big time people, you see mm-hmm. like what that looks like, you know. But coming here, you don't see like, there's no Interscope here. There's no major labels here at all. And everyone is creating their own space. And that is the most inspiring thing for me. When I came back, I realized like, these people are not waiting for anyone to hand them anything. These people are creating what they want to be, you know, what they want. It's like, so that attribute about folk here is amazing.
Were you aware of Baltimore music when you were younger living here?
Club music. Like, whenever I would go to the parties, it would always be Black Star playing, K-Swift, you know, Baltimore Club. But that, not like so much like the way that I'm aware of my peers now.
Speaking of creating your own space, I was hoping you could tell me about Baltigirls, the collective you're a part of, and just about how you all have created this space in the Baltimore arts scene.
Yeah, I'm actually not in Baltigirls anymore.
You're not?
No.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't know that.
No, it's all good. I mean, yeah, I didn't have the time to commit to them. But they are definitely creating their own space, and it's so necessary.
Have you had any like negative experiences in the Baltimore arts community, and are there any like holes in the scene that you think need filled?
Yeah. I mean, I peep. I always peep. I peep what's going on. You know, I peep, like, you know, how certain people will only book certain acts in certain venues. I peep that. So, yeah, I always peep, like, the way that people, not everyone wants to book black acts. That's, like, a big thing. Do I let it get to me or get in my way? No. I don't even focus on that, to be blatantly honest. So, like, to say that it was is a negative experience, yeah, I mean, I guess, but I'd honestly, I don't sit here and think about that at all, because I have to focus on, I feel like if I focus on what I don't want, I'm going to continue to get what I don't want. A void that needs to be filled here is the resources. You got all this talent and all this drive and all this hustle and there's grants, you know, and which is awesome. Like, a lot of people are out here on the grant hustle, which is amazing. But like, as far as from music goes, like, where the A&Rs at? You know, like, as far as like getting Baltimore music out of Baltimore, because like I feel like it's in Baltimore, and like it's like, yeah, DC will know a little bit, and that's it. You know, like when I go across the country to LA, they don't know. They're not aware at all. But when I go across the country to Baltimore, everyone knows about who's popping in LA. Mm-hmm. Everyone knows about who's popping in New York. Everyone knows about who's popping in Atlanta. So it's more about, you know, folks' means coming out to push Baltimore music outside of Baltimore.
What are your creative or career ambitions, and how important is recognition to you?
My creative ambitions are, I have no like limits to like what I want to do, like literally limitless, taking this as far as I possibly can go until the last breath leaves my body. Like, as many people as possible, as many places as possible, getting the message out to everyone. But yeah, just no limits. I'm definitely trying to travel. I've never left the country. I have my passport. It's ready. like, you know, tour all over. Really, really, you know, not place any, and I keep saying this, but just not place any limitations on myself at all. Like, not like a tunnel vision at all. Like, definitely widespread view, seeing like all the options rather than just one.
You said spreading the message. What is the message?
The message is, you know, I feel like overall, like for me, what I'm preaching is love yourself, know yourself, and respect yourself, and expect others to hold others to treat you the same as well. You know, don't let yourself be belittled by society or by other people's words or by other people's opinions, because I feel like so often, like, we let those things get to us, and those things will kill a dream before it even starts. And I feel like, you know, we're the only ones that will ever get in our way, because we're the only people that we can control. I can't control anyone outside of myself. I can't. Like, I've tried. I literally tried to in my life. Like, I've been like, no, like, you should do that. And the person's like, no, I'm not going to do that. And I'm like, no, but you should really do that. And they were like, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm like, no, but you should. And they're like, no, like, that's not going to happen. And it's like, really realizing, like, oh, like, you can't make anybody do anything, but you can do something. If you're in a situation like that makes you feel uncomfortable, what can you do about it? Because you can't change the situation, but you removing yourself, or you putting yourself in a different position, changes the situation.
Your music feels very like timely and of the moment to me, and I was wondering how important, if at all, that is to you. And like, do you think about timeliness versus timelessness, or what kind of music are you aiming to create in that way?
I believe that I'm aiming to create music that is timeless and timely at the same time, because there's duality in everything. So it's like something that you could listen to 20 years from now and it'll take you back to that time. You know, that's how I feel about my favorite records. I can listen to my favorite records and know that even if I wasn't alive during that time, whatever time period they're singing about, it takes me to where they're at. I feel that energy. And that's what I'm really trying to capture, is really what's going on. Like, really, what's the energy? Like, fuck the bullshit. Like, fuck pretending like just really capturing what is really going on. And it's obviously all biased because it's from my perspective, you know, and you will have a different perspective completely. Everyone else could have a completely different perspective from me. But for me, that is what I'm creating, is like, I feel like I'm just documenting it, you know?
Yeah, nostalgia for something you haven't experienced. It's so cool and it's so interesting. Mm-hmm. I have the same thing when I listen to certain records, and it's not necessarily that you were there for that time period, but you still like get nostalgic for it.
Right. Yeah. And I think like that's a true storyteller. My favorite artists are storytellers. They paint pictures. I can close my eyes and like, you know, they say little details that are like, whoa, like red, like even if somebody's wearing a specific outfit or the weather of that day, those little tiny details, like it takes you there. You can put yourself in that person's shoes. And I feel like that is like a huge thing. And like, that's also a superpower, like empathy, being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes and feel what they're feeling without judging them. Just feel what they're feeling. Most like no judgment. Just understanding where they're coming from, because I feel like once we do that, like it can bring everything, like we can know what equality is, because you can be like, oh, like you're human too, like wow, you felt this emotion for this, I felt this same emotion for this, you know. I feel like everybody has their own struggles and their own problems, and we tend to forget that, oh, like we all experience the same two basic emotions, which are love and fear. Everything stems from love and fear. That's like everybody. Nobody is exempt from that.
And art, more than anything else, I think, is able to tap into people's empathy in that way. You know, you can give them all the facts and figures and everything, but books and music, I think that is what helps people step into someone else's perspective often.
Right. I completely agree.
When is Diaspora coming out?
Ooh, okay.
Is that the big question?
Yeah. Oh my God, girl. Okay.
You don't have to put anything on the books. I just was hoping for an update.
Yes. Well, it's literally, it's like, it's right there. I'm reaching. And being an independent artist is so interesting, because I don't have no label in my ear like, we need to get this out by this date, Joy. You know, it's like literally like, Joy, you need to, you know, get this out by this date. But then that part of me is like, don't rush it, though. So I'm this year for sure. I'm aiming for the spring, like spring, summer. So probably more towards summer. But yeah, I'm excited to share. I've been working on these. It's an EP. It's going to be 5 tracks, possibly 6, maybe have like a live track on there. And I've been working on it for 2 years. Yeah, almost 2 years now. And not even like, I didn't even start off like, I'm gonna make Diaspora. Like, it came together in this way for 2 years. It was definitely an organic experience. Like, it just happened that I turned around and I had all these songs that were cohesive. And they definitely are all honest. And they're all like on that storytelling tip. And I was like, cool. You know, I feel like that's probably what I'm so happy about the most about this project, is how organically it came together. Like, there was no forcing it at all. It's definitely something that just naturally came.
I feel like you're kind of looked at as this artist on the rise in Baltimore. And so I did wonder about the timing and about balancing maybe like the pressure to get something out with not wanting to rush it. I mean, how right. Have you reconciled that?
That's like a real big internal struggle for me, especially since I'm a perfectionist. Like, consciousness, that was a year. I wrote that the singing parts one time, and then I wrote the rap verse, and then I scratched the rap verse, and then I wrote another rap verse, and I was like, okay, this is the one. And then like, I sat on it. I sit on my music. Like, you're never going to hear a song from me if I haven't sit on it for at least a few months. And like, that's just the way that I am. If I don't like it after a few months, I'm not going to share it with you, because that means that you're not going to like it after a few months. So, you know, I've learned to, like I said earlier, accept this about myself and make it work for me. So I like the way that things end up more, rather than sounding like a rough draft, which is like how I first started making music, where like I was just excited to share. I sit on it and I'm like, oh, I could add this. Oh, I can add this. Oh, I can add this. This will make this pop more. And so all those things like help, you know, that's just part of my process. And then the other part of me is like, people are waiting. You know, like, because as soon as you drop your first single from a project, that's the countdown.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you just start counting down. Like, that's just like what it is. So I feel like that's awesome because it's pushing me to not oversit. Like, this is not a real word, but oversit on things. Like, sit on things for too long. Because there's the Tribe Called Quest story. Like, they had to go in there and yank the CDs out of Q-Tip's hand. Like, no, we're taking this now. Y'all are not about to do this anymore. Sorry, it's good. You know, and Low End Theory is legendary. So
you can definitely overthink it so easily. That seems like a really hard balance to strike.
Yeah, especially if it's just you. You know, like, I don't have management. I don't have, like, anybody else sitting there in my ear telling me, oh, like, you know, I don't even have anybody like helping me with rough drafts. No one is sitting there helping me write. No one's sitting there helping me arrange anything. Like, this is all me. So it's like coming to grips with giving the best that I possibly can at this moment in my life and understanding that I will do better. You know what I mean? So being like, this is the best that I can do right now. Letting that go and understanding that the next will be better.
Do you ever wish for more feedback or more creative consulting? I mean, obviously, like, there's so many great things that come with just creating for yourself and not having someone whispering in your ear. But
right.
I don't know. Do you ever wish someone was, like, ripping the track out of your hand saying, like, yes, it's done,
sometimes,
it's done.
Yeah, I will be honest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's always helpful to have, like, I feel like that's, like, that comes with... I feel like that person that I have to trust you. Like, you know, I have to really trust your opinion and respect your opinion at that. But I feel like that comes with me being able to do that for myself first. And then the right person will come along who, you know, the team will start to build. Because that's why I'm really like, I always encourage people like, hey, like, even if you're not like the best at it, manage yourself for a bit. Book your own tour. Book your own shows. Because when you learn how to do everything yourself, eventually other people you're gonna start hiring other people because, you know, you want more energy to focus on just your art or whatever it is that you just want to focus on. But you know what that person's supposed to be doing because you did it. Therefore, it doesn't create a crutch either, because if that person disappears, you're like, all right, cool, I was doing this before, you know? So I feel like that it's like, especially as a woman, you know, like, we gotta learn how to do everything. We have to do our research. Men are so quick to come in and just try and dominate. And I've had that try. And I'm like, whoa, like, what's going on? Like, this ain't even me anymore. So.
Do you feel like you have come into your voice at this point? And if so, when did that happen for you?
I feel like I'm coming into my voice. I feel like with every song that I write, I find out more about myself. Because I just let it flow. I'm not someone that sits there and, like, will, like, stab at something for a long, like, if I hear something and nothing's coming to me, then I'm going to just leave it alone for a bit. That's just the way I work.
So beyond Diaspora, what else is next for you?
More visuals, for sure, because visuals are insanely fun to make, and it gives me the opportunity to use my musical theater background and, like, bring every... Because I see... When I create music, I see things very much so. So it's fun to have folk around me that are help me to execute the visions that I have. Tour, shows, more shows around the country, outside of the country, and more music. Because after Diaspora, I'm working on something else. You know, don't stop.
And getting that passport stamped.
Yes, for sure. A few times.
Joy, thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me. She a dope girl, dope girl.
Thanks for listening to my conversation with singer, rapper, and songwriter Joy Postel. I'm Quinn Kelly, and this is a Baltimore Sun podcast. You can subscribe to Female Trouble on iTunes, SoundCloud, Stitcher, or anywhere else you listen to podcasts. It would also help us out if you gave us a rating on iTunes. Female Trouble is online at baltimoresun.com/femaletrouble and on Twitter at FMLTrouble. Our theme song is Dope Girls by Shifty featuring TT the Artist. Thanks again, and we'll be back next Tuesday. Dope.